Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and it's my pleasure and privilege to present once again Peter Manning, the son of Paul Manning, author of the landmark opus Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, that I've been accessing for quite some time on this program. Peter, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you.
Last week we did a half-hour interview right off the cuff, Peter. We have not spent a lot of time talking since, but I wanted to follow up some of that discussion and also to offer up a bit of an apology if things were a little rough. An apology to the listeners and also to you, but that was absolutely spontaneous last week.
Mm-hmm.
Your father wrote the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and perhaps in analyzing some of what he went through and some of the differences between your father and other journalists, we might want to pick up with a subject you discussed last week, namely the difference that American journalism underwent when we went from the transition from radio to television.
Okay. At the time, radio was king, and TV wasn't perceived as being the big thing it eventually became.
By the way, this was in World War II when your father worked for CBS News with Edward R. Murrow covering the war.
That's right.
Okay, go ahead.
And at the time, the journalists were real journalists. They weren't celebrity announcers. And at the end of World War II, the news team got replaced by people who were simply announcers who had good speech and would toe the corporate line. So the real journalists, with a few exceptions who became celebrities themselves, were just left out.
Well, your father obviously had achieved a considerable level of journalistic status in his work with the CBS team in World War II. He then, however, branched off following a story that is the equivalent, both intellectually and to a certain extent politically, of the discovery that Copernicus and later Galileo made, where they discovered that the impression that the Earth, the Sun and the Moon and the stars revolved around the Earth was false, and that in fact the reverse was the case, that is to say the Earth revolved around the Sun, yet that was completely at variance with the political and intellectual orthodoxy of the time. And what your father came across in studying the Nazi flight capital was the fact incredible to the uninitiated and disturbing to those who know that the Third Reich did not disappear but went underground. We talked about that last week.
Yeah, I think he didn't realize the how big the story was. He was just a journalist. He found a few things out at the end of the war. You know, what happened to Martin Bormann was one of the stories he was chasing down. And he thought some Nazis got away and took money with them, ran off to South America, and he chased down this story. Then he came back to the U.S., had a career, and he stumbled back into this story in the 1960s. I know he was 100% of his time was put into this in the late 60s and going into the early 70s. This was sort of a six-day-a-week project. He went to Europe a few times talking. What he wanted to do is actually interview Martin Bormann. So he was in contact with the Martin Bormann people in Europe and down in South America. And actually in 1972 or 73, I'm not sure when, there was a very elaborate plan that three photographers from CBS would go down to South America with my father, and he would interview Martin Bormann live, and it would be the anchor up in New York would be Walter Cronkite. That plan fell through. And the reason given is that the younger people in the Bormann organization did not want to rock the boat or make themselves known, whereas the older members wanted to proudly tell their history of how they helped an emerging new West Germany and how they also helped to fight communism.
Peter, you say your father did not know the full implications of the story when he began, but he did. The impression that I get from speaking to you as well as from reading the book is that he did indeed understand that great, albeit unpalatable truth to many, which is that the Reich did survive and went in an underground fashion.
Yeah, definitely. It's a worldwide organization, but it looked to be purely commercial. What you say about a Fourth Reich coming around, I've been thinking about this for years, and yeah, I agree. I think it's not just commercial, it's philosophical, and they do want to emerge sometime in the near future.
Just wanted to read into the record for members of the audience that have not heard this, the remarkable correspondence that took place between your father and Heinrich Müller. Heinrich Müller, by the way, was the head of the Gestapo in World War II and then went underground with the Bormann Organization and became its director of security. And it was an absolutely feared individual. Anybody who crossed the Bormann group, if Müller decided, they died. And that was simply the way it went. Reading now from your father's book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. During years of research for this book, I have become aware of Heinrich Müller and his security force, which provides protection for the leadership in Latin America and wherever else they may travel to Europe and to the United States to check on investments and profits. Through intermediaries, I have attempted unceasingly to penetrate to the central core of the organization in South America, but have been denied access. At the last meeting that I know about, it was voted, quote, Herr Manning's writing would focus undue attention on our activities, and his request must once again be denied, unquote. The elderly leaders, including Reichsminister Bormann, who is now 80, wanted me on the scene to write of their side of the story, above all his story of one of the most amazing and successful financial and industrial cloaking actions in history, of which he is justifiably proud. I had sent word to Bormann that the true story, his first-hand account, should become a matter of historical record, and stated that I would be agreeable to writing it if I could tell his true story, warts and all. Back came the word, quote, You are a free-world journalist and can write as you think best. We, too, are interested only in truth, unquote. They agreed to my request to bring along a three-man camera crew from CBS News to film my conversations with Martin Bormann, and even approved my wish for at least a personal thumbprint of the former Reichsleiter and party minister, which would be positive proof of his identity. At the organization's request, I sent the background, names, photos, and credentials of this particular CBS cameramen, Lawrence Walter Pierce, Richard Henry Perez and Odin Lester Kitzmiller, an award-winning camera crew which got the exclusive film coverage of the attempted assassination of Governor George Wallace when he was running for president. I'm sorry to say that the younger leaders, the ones in virtual command, voted no. And so that was the end of your father's project in terms of being able to actually contact Martin Bormann. Now, those communications from the Bormann group saying you're a free world journalist and can write as you see fit turned out to be somewhat more cheerful than the reality your father encountered pursuing this story. It was not easy for him.
That's right. Since he got shot down after many attempts at trying to interview Bormann and get an interview, he decided to write a book and have it published in the West, in New York. And he got the book, he shopped it around, it got warmly accepted at the editorial level at Doubleday and Dutton and Bantam, but not Bantam, another one, I forget the name. But once it got past the first editor, they come back a week or two later and say, now we can't do anything here. Well, he got a maverick publisher, Lyle Stewart, at the time to pick up the book, and it was published in a very conventional way, well edited and put out. So all this information came out during the early to mid-70s. He kept rewriting it, got it finally published around 1980, 81, and got rave reviews all over the country, Atlantic City, Des Moines, Chicago. He was on a talk show, a live news talk show in Chicago, just rave reviews. However, there was absolute dead silence in the New York Times and the New York Book Review community. They would not review the book. They wouldn't mention it. They wouldn't pan it. They wouldn't say it was goofy. They just didn't mention it.
Mm-hmm. Also, by the way, as I mentioned, a lot of others have experienced that fate before and since. So go ahead.
And as you know, if you go to the bookstore, they'll publish just anything. So down in Washington also, there was silence. There was no book reviews coming out of the town of Washington, D.C. And then also in Los Angeles, what with the movie making and the TV industry out there, there was a book review, but it really said a lot of bad things about the theory. And it was written by a guy who obviously did not read the book. He may have read the jacket of the book, but if you read the book, my father uses a lot of facts and he builds a case and he states his theory.
Mm-hmm.
And you could believe it or not, but the facts are there. So this guy just absolutely damned the book, said the theory fell on its face, etc. And I guess they didn't want the media out there in Hollywood and, you know, the movies and the TV media to do anything about this story. So the book was really blacklisted, and my father was blacklisted. They just wouldn't take him seriously.
Do you recall the name of that writer in Los Angeles offhand?
No, I don't, but
Just out of curiosity, if you could hunt that down, I'd be interested to see if it's somebody I'm familiar with and if he or she has done similar numbers on important material. Because one does find certain writers that have a tendency to make a career out of zapping good books.
Uh-huh.
And I just
well, I kept all the papers. I have all that stuff. I know that he was put himself as an expert on Reinhard Galen, I think,
mm-hmm.
who was a very nasty person who destroyed a town.
He was actually the Nazi chief of intelligence for the Eastern Front and then jumped to the CIA with his entire organization.
I may be wrong about that name.
Reinhard Galen or somebody else? Reinhard Heydrich? Oh, you know what?
Heydrich.
Yeah, what you're talking about, actually, Heydrich was the head of the Gestapo, or the SD,
yeah.
The Sicherheitsdienst, the SS intelligence service, was also Reich's protector for Czechoslovakia.
Yeah,
and
right.
He was assassinated, and then they liquidated the town of Lidice in Czechoslovakia, killed
That's
everybody.
The guy. Yep. So this guy who's the book critic had some up-and-coming movie about that person.
Mm-hmm.
That was his claim to his expertise. But I have all those reviews.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see who that was.
In storage.
Something that's interesting is the contrast between the apparent attitude of the Bormann group themselves. At least the old guard were interested in getting the story out. Reading from the introduction to your father's book, oddly, I encountered less resistance from Martin Bormann and his aging peers than I did from the cover-up groups in West Germany, Paris, London, Washington, and Wall Street. Bormann knows he is mortal, as are his cronies who have turned over the day-to-day direction of the Bormann organization to a younger leadership. The old guard want the story told, and the only point of friction is whether it should be before or after Fuhrer Bormann's demise. And he also writes earlier in the introduction, "The closer I got to the truth, the more quiet attention I received from the forces surrounding and protecting Martin Bormann, and also from those who had a direct interest in halting my investigation. Over the period of years it took to research this book, I was the object of diligent observations by squads of Gestapo agents dispatched from South America by General Gestapo Mueller, who directs all security matters for Martin Bormann, Nazi in exile, and his organization, the most remarkable business group anywhere in the secret world of today. Mueller's interest in me, an American journalist, confirmed the truth of my many interviews and my ongoing investigation. Bormann is alive. They don't want waves. So they have been willing to expend immense time and money in tracking me and my progress." Last week, Peter, you spoke very movingly of what your family had been through during the course of your father's investigation. By way of review for people that might not have heard that first interview, if you could touch briefly on that for us.
Yeah, well, he spent a lot of his time for many years. And it didn't pan out, didn't make a profit, didn't make any money, so the family didn't have too much money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also very emotionally draining because the people he had counted on to publicize this, he was treated like he was a lunatic. He had friends in the New York Times, old war correspondent buddies, who were very enthusiastic about the book when it was just about to be coming out and said, yeah, this is great, Paul. This is a big score for you. This is a coup. We definitely got to write something about this. But then they get back a week or so later and say, look, Paul, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I don't want to lose my pension.
Mm-hmm.
And these were, number one A writers for the New York Times, very respected, very well-known journalists. Also in the television world, he had friends who used to be correspondents who at first were going to help him and then just turned their back on him completely. He was kind of a simple guy. He's from the 20s and 30s. His generation were things were black and white. He was a patriot. He was a journalist. But it was a very complicated world after TV came on the scene, and he just didn't get how complex the world was. He was just kept chasing this story, came out with his book. I don't know if it's still available, but he put about two decades of his life into it.
And came up with a very remarkable work. And if the truth about political reality is ever to be understood, people are going to have to come to terms with your father's remarkable book. Last week, Peter, you also mentioned the visible harassment that your father and your family received from this surveillance, or from the surveillance, the agents of surveillance or the team.
Yeah, well, I was in high school at the time. Then I in 1969, graduated, got into college down at NYU, so I was living at home again. But, they'd always be telling stories about how someone would be following my mother, and these were not muggers or anything. These were just mysterious people who would be following and looking. Sometimes they'd a couple of guys once in New York City outside Saks Fifth Avenue kind of leaned up on her in a crowd and pulled the papers out of her hand and walked away. These are guys in gray business suits. Just weird things happening. The phone was bugged. He was being, I guess, watched by several people who wanted to know if he was on to something or who he was working for, if any, or if he was just a propagandist for some organization. But he was working absolutely alone.
And
no, I mean, no one supported him. No one gave him any money to fund. It was totally his own doing.
You mentioned last week, too, that your brother Jerry's mysterious murder was believed by your father to have been in retribution for the book. Is that correct?
That's right.
And again, my condolences for his murder. No assailant ever found, nothing taken, just a...
No, never. It was just strange circumstances. Of course, New York City in 1993, that was their biggest year for homicides. It was over 1,000 homicides.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a dangerous city. I grew up there, lived there for many years. But it was middle of the afternoon on February on the top floor of a six-floor walk-up. He wasn't rich. He wasn't involved with bad guys or drugs or anything. He was just shot.
Nothing taken.
Nothing. Well, he didn't have anything. He was a painter, like Edward Hopper. You know, there was no reason to mug him or steal from him.
And also, we should stress, there was no quarrel. He wasn't engaged in an argument.
No, it was just bang, 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 according to the neighbor. He had gone down to do... he went down to a store downstairs to get some stuff for an elderly resident of the floor mm-hmm. who couldn't walk up and down six floors. So he ran up, as was his custom, ran up to six floors, went into his apartment, came out to deliver the food to the elderly lady, and it was bang, 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 and that was it. I mean, it didn't appear to be any motive. Plus, he was a real kind guy. He wasn't involved with friction or fighting or anything. He was just a real sweet person.
Mm-hmm. And again, for those who might express skepticism that this would be connected with your father's work, I've seen things like that happen to people I know, including people who've had their children retaliated against for what they've done. That's not an uncommon scenario. And again, your father was of the conviction that this was in retaliation for the book.
Yeah, I mean, he went through World War II, and there was a lot of fighting. There was a lot of spy stories told. This was a reality. This is how things were done.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of friends who worked for the Secret Service in Britain and the spy operations during World War II who were American. Because the journalists, it was all part of an effort. And it was typical for a journalist to be part of the military effort.
Mm-hmm.
There were censors then, but they all worked together. And he had a lot of friends from the war who eventually got into intelligence after World War II. He had a lot of sources.
Mm-hmm. A couple of fascinating points that you made last week, Peter, and I'd like to touch back on those. One, your father had received information or had done research indicating that the Bormann Group had infiltrated the CIA, but the CIA did not know that.
Yeah, well, it's like what you said before. It's a vaccine, but maybe it's tainted.
Right.
In fact, what was it? The Nazi counterintelligence chief became the West German.
That's Reinhard Gehlen. That's the guy we alluded to earlier.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Sure.
We took German scientists into our space program. We needed them.
Right.
We utilized them. All of a sudden, after World War II, we're fighting the communists, so we need these talented Nazis to help us fight.
Mm-hmm.
So they came into our American intelligence community. They controlled it.
Right.
Even though most of the intelligence community were all patriots and hardworking and on the right track, there was a little inner circle that had their own different agenda.
And by the way, I've noted it in past broadcasts that the Gehlen organization really functioned as a Trojan horse in U.S. intelligence. So the military chain of command from the Third Reich was still in effect. And the situation proceeded basically along those lines. But specifically, your father was convinced that, your father passed away a few years ago, otherwise I'd be interviewing him, but he was convinced that the Bormann Group specifically had infiltrated the agency without the agency's knowledge.
That's correct.
So in effect, there would be, according to the information your father had developed, a CIA within the CIA that's not really loyal to the United States, the United States, many shortcomings notwithstanding, but is in fact loyal to the Bormann Group and Nazi Germany.
That's right. And you take a look at American behavior in the world after World War II. It's coming out now that our intelligence community did a lot of really bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Coup d'etat against democratically elected communist leaders.
All kinds of people.
All over the place, bringing guns into one area, taking drugs out, selling drugs here, taking the money to buy more guns to fund more wars.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of nasty things that ostensibly were done by the U.S., not in U.S. character.
Right.
We went to war in World War II to free the world and to oppress tyranny. And all of a sudden, after World War II, the U.S. character is doing all these really evil things. It doesn't add up. Maybe it was a Nazi influence that caused all this and had the biological warfare and all over the world.
I think it's a combination of the two. There's certainly fascism is not something alien to the United States. There were many and many in positions of power who admired Hitler. One of the reasons the Bormann Group was able to develop was that there are plenty of industrialists and financiers who helped to finance Hitler and who liked what Hitler and Mussolini did. And likewise, the incorporation of the residua of the Nazi national security establishment was also symptomatic of the same defect. But nonetheless, though, I think the information that your father had developed, and it's consistent with an hypothesis that I've advanced on this program, is that there is within the Central Intelligence Agency, and I believe this is also true of the military, an entity within an entity that is not, in fact, loyal to the United States, but loyal to a foreign power, and which may, in fact, be doing some of the mischief that is being attributed to the United States simply in order to get us into more trouble.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'm not stating that the shortcomings of the U.S. intelligence community are due entirely or even primarily to the Bormann Group, yet I think that it's altogether possible. In fact, I'd say it's probable that a good deal of the mischief, in particular in the end of after the Cold War, is now being done to undermine the United States.
Yep.
And again, I think there's a similar group, a similar fifth column. By the way, this is also consistent with Nazi aggression against a more powerful country. They establish a fifth column movement within the country and then subvert it. Another thing we spoke about last week briefly, Peter, was your father's conviction that the Bormann Group was at the core of President Kennedy's assassination.
Yeah, well, that goes into the control of the CIA from the inside, where you have a few people controlling it, and the majority, 99% of the CIA were good guys, so to speak, but you have a small core that was controlling it, and
mm-hmm.
They had a hit team down in Dallas. I understand it is that Dan Rather, as a young nobody, happened to be down in Dallas that day, and his career was made because he happened to be on air and could report all the details. That's quite a coincidence that he'd be there. But when you see how the media has developed, where the people who are anchors and news journalists are celebrities mostly,
mm-hmm.
and announcers. They're not real journalists. They're not real reporters and researchers or historians. They're celebrity announcers. And in order to make someone who would succeed Walter Cronkite, they needed a celebrity. So for some reason, Dan Rather happened to be down in Dallas on that fateful day.
Well, it may have been a career move, or who knows? Maybe because there certainly is a strong connection between
maybe
the
just a coincidence. You don't know.
It may be just a coincidence. I would note that Dan Rather has given several different versions of his behavior on that day, which conflict. One, he says he ran back to the CBS studios to get the information to the public. Another says he took a cab. Then he said he heard it when he was having lunch with John Nance Garner, a former vice president. They say that everybody who was of the age of consciousness when Kennedy was killed remembers what they were doing when they heard the news. That does not apparently include Dan Rather. Did your father discuss the Bormann Group and the JFK assassination at any length, or was this only a peripheral topic? Or what are you in a position to tell us about that?
Well, not too much. I kind of had my ear open, but this whole story developed, or this whole body of research developed over many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
There are no big headlines or big hurdles to cross, but it was just an ongoing bit of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, he wrote a book because he got shot down in this first book. He wrote a book about writing the book, and that was never published, but I still have a copy of that.
Oh, really? What was that called? Paul Manning, Journalist in Exile, perhaps.
Maybe so. I don't know.
All righty. We have just a couple of minutes left here, Peter, in this interview. Again, we've repeated, gone over some points. Is there anything that we have not spoken about? We've covered your father's career, the impediments that were presented, your brother's tragic death, some of the things your father had apparently learned about the Bormann Group and its activities vis-a-vis the United States. Anything that you would like to comment as we wrap the interview up?
Well, yeah, it's that this whole subject can be talked on an alternative station. But if you mention Bormann or Nazi influence on the conventional media, they'll pull the plug. They won't tell you you're a nut. They'll simply pull the plug or go to commercial. I know years ago, maybe it might have been 10 or 20 years ago, 10 or 15 years ago, Ted Koppel on the evening news show he does, whatever it is, Dateline or something, a guy he was interviewing down in South America then said, and then, of course, there's the Bormann influence down here in South America. The guy, they went to commercial immediately, and when they came back, the guy was gone.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to be talking to any of these major news people and somehow squeeze in talking about the Nazi influence or the Bormann, just mention the words, they won't talk to you.
Yep.
They're afraid of losing their pension or something. Try it. I think people should really do some research and look because the people in charge in this country aren't going to tell you.
Yeah, I've also found that an awful lot of interests in the so-called alternative media are hostile to the same sort of subject. However, they just dismiss one as a conspiracy theorist and write it off then and say it's not politically correct, blah, 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 blah. Rather than just cut you off cold. But I found much resistance to this type of material in the progressive sector as well. So it's not that easy.
Yeah, that's propaganda that the Nazis have put out. Wolf in sheep clothing.
Yeah, there are quite a few of those. And we've run across them. Well, once again, Peter, because we're at the end of the interview, let me thank you from the bottom of my heart and on behalf of this country for your father's work and for the suffering that all of you and your family had to endure as a result of your father's crusade. It may be scant comfort, but again, if things are ever to be righted, I think an understanding of your father's work will be at the center of that correction.
Thank you very much. It's been good talking to you.
All righty. Well, thank you once again for visiting with us and for fleshing out some of these points at greater length.
Okay. Good evening.
Okay. For Peter Manning, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.